Okay, can you tell me where you got your education?
I got a AB, AM, and PhD at the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm. And in economics?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And when did you graduate?
42, 43, 48.
Mm-hmm. So you had a period of time when you were in the Army, or is that...
I beg your pardon?
Did, if you, Okay,
well,
so,
I got the AM, I guess, about the well, actually, I guess it was in the Army when I received it.
That was what I asked.
But I went in, and then after I got out in 46, I guess it was, I finished up the PhD.
And all your thesis, your work had been in fiscal policy.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Taxation, public finance.
And then you went to work for UCLA?
UCLA, right.
As an assistant professor?
Well, I went out as a lecturer. I guess when I went out and I came out, I was I can't remember what I was.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get the job at the Board of Governors?
The Bank of the Fed of San Francisco ran summer programs for young aspiring professors. Or, you know, young faculty, had a program where you'd go and spend some time at the San Francisco Fed and at the New York Fed and at the Board. And in that program, I guess I got into an argument with Bleacher Youngdahl, and it just kind of went on from there. They got in touch with me and wondered if I wanted to come for the Board for a year on a leave of absence from UCLA, which I did, and didn't work when I went there. It didn't work in the monetary policy area. I worked in the government finance section, which really followed treasury activities and budgetary activities, but was, you know, sort of a part of that section also was the staff work, did staff work for the FOMC.
So what year was that?
I went to the Board in 50, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm. So the Korean War broke out June 28th, 1950, right? So you went to work before or after... The war broke out.
Golly, I don't remember. But it was, I went, I would have gone probably the summer of 1950.
Mm-hmm. That's right after, I think right after Ralph Leach started,
He had been there a while.
Then it was Youngdahl. One of them started in June.
Youngdahl, I think, had been there even longer. I think Youngdahl hired Leach.
Okay, then I think...
Leach was at Valley National out in Phoenix, and Youngdahl waylaid him somewhere or another. Mm-hmm. And both of them were there and you know, well-established by the time I got there.
Mm-hmm. the key thing that was going on at that time was the fight between the Fed and the Treasury over pegging long-term interest rates. How aware were you of that, of what was going on, of that struggle when you started working?
Well, a lot of it was tangential at first, because in the form of, say, maybe lunching with those people and listening in on some of their arguments as to what was going on, so that, again, you know, as I mentioned to you earlier, that was really was on the periphery of a lot of that, since I really, the first couple of years, just kind of gradually moved into the sort of the FOMC activities. And the early work was really in budgetary and tax policies and how they affected the Board.
So you didn't have much contact with Riefler at that point?
Not a whole lot. You know, it just sort of evolved as time went on. But at first, no, he was way up there. I was down in the basement yet at that time.
And then, how did you become involved with FOMC activities and with Progress?
I think largely just through association with Leach and Youngdahl, and then after Leach left, I kind of moved up in sort of the area where he had been working.
So at that point, you were working with under Riefler, or who were you working for then?
Well, at first worked for Leach, and then for Youngdahl. And Youngdahl, you know, would have reported up to Riefler really was not in sort of the, as I recall,
right.
In the...
He was more of an advisor.
Yeah, he was in a little box over to the side of the chairman. And I don't think had much to do or bothered much with the administrative matters.
Mm-hmm.
See, all of this was in the Division of Research, which was under Ralph Young. Most of the time.
Did you have any contact with Ralph Young?
Later on, but a lot of it was simply that he was head of the division, and I was part of that division, but intellectually, much more with Woody Thomas and Riefler.
What can you tell me about Woody Thomas? Just from reading the FOMC minutes, the impression one gets from him is that he was primarily a statistician, that he would summarize statistics on the economy, but that he was not himself a theoretical economist.
Not to the extent that Wynn Riefler was, but I think Woody Thomas is probably underestimated by a lot of the people because he was a sort of a very slow southerner, soft-spoken mumbler,
mm-hmm.
a great mumbler, and I think was smarter and probably had more influence on Martin and some of the other governors than he generally got credit for.
Do you know how long he'd been at the Federal Reserve System?
Oh, golly, a long time.
Mm-hmm. So he'd come up through the Depression.
I don't know. You know, when you come into an organization, somebody's been
sure.
there, you get the impression they've always been there.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can't give you any any dates,
mm-hmm.
except he seemed well-versed in the history of what had gone on.
Mm-hmm. In terms of talking economics, did you have a sense of what these people like Riefler and Thomas and Young, how the Depression affected them and the kind of lessons they drew from it about monetary policy? Do you have a sense what they would have said if you'd asked them you know, what caused the Depression and how was the Fed involved?
Not really. That,
mm-hmm.
you know, so much of our discussion was really involved in the minutiae of the government securities market and the relation with the New York Fed and the various policies, current
mm-hmm.
policies.
Did you have contact with individuals at the New York Fed?
Oh, yes. I fought. I just want to put it that way. I argued, you know, a great deal with Bob Rosa and found him a very, very challenging intellect.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a more operative basis, did a great deal with John Larkin, but got to know him better years later after he'd gone to Citibank.
Right.
And we were both on the advisory committee for the ABA Government Borrowing Committee, which advised the Treasury.
Yeah, I've talked with John Larkin. In fact, he must be very fair-minded. He encouraged me strongly to talk to people who had been at the board, so I would get both sides.
Mm-hmm.
I'm especially interested in your impressions of people at the New York Fed and how the board's market-oriented view differed from the views of people at the board. In terms of the way Rosa looked at the development of the government securities market, would you think he would have been sympathetic with the views of Alan Sproul and Bob Rouse in terms of the importance of the New York Fed controlling rates and the term structure of rates?
Oh, I think so. I think so.
So he didn't share the board, the Leach, Youngdahl, Riefler view that the system should encourage the government securities market to develop on its own?
Well, again, you're getting the kind of specifics. You're trying to know what he really thought, but
mm-hmm.
I there were certainly disagreements on specific issues at that time, which probably reflected a basic difference in their grounding as to how markets work and what the role of government should be
mm-hmm.
in those markets. So that I think that the board staff in general was much more free market oriented.
Do you remember any specific disagreements that you had with ARC desk and individuals there?
No, I think a lot of it involved the amount and timing of the New York Fed intervention in markets and that role, so that they had their day-to-day responsibility, and mm-hmm. I think felt much closer, probably felt they could do more, felt that their role was bigger and more important than probably a lot of the board people did, and probably took a much shorter run viewpoint than the board people.
Mm. I think it was about 1956 that the desks ceased reporting to the New York president and began reporting to the FOMC, and in particular to Chairman Martin. Do you remember that change in supervision?
Oh, golly, just not that you bring it up, but I can't attest as to dates or how quickly. Just that was a part
guess,
of the evolution.
I guess that was about 55, and in 56 they went from the executive committee to full FOMC meetings on a regular basis,
yeah.
So the decisions began to be made much more with FOMC rather than with just between a few
mm-hmm.
FOMC members. So you were on the phone often with the New York desk, with people at the desk.
Yeah, in later years,
mm-hmm.
yes, after Leach had gone, and so that there was, and many times it would be that several of us would be involved with would be on the phone,
mm-hmm.
so that it might be that. Several were involved on discussing various matters.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me your impressions of how the Fed implemented monetary policy in the 1950s? If someone were to ask you to describe how the instructions of the FOMC were translated to the New York desk, and you know what the targets of the New York desk were, and how were they set? What can you remember about that period?
I can remember the board meetings where these were generally were thrashed out, and
so you were present at those, some of them.
Yes, and
so that would have been starting about when?
You got me. I don't know, the middle or late 50s.
Okay.
I left in 58.
Okay.
So there was a probably fairly short time in there. I have the impression that the efforts of Martin to reach a consensus, to come to some sort of an agreement and a workable way to get at the policy, and at that he was quite good.
Okay, I'd love to come back to that in just a second, but what was what specific instructions was Martin and the FOMC communicating to the New York desk? What were they telling the New York desk to target after their meetings?
Well, I think your record would show that.
Okay, but I'm interested in your impressions.
I can't, get specific on that, but certainly the FOMC minutes would catalog the instructions to the desk.
Well, but they're you go back and you read those, and until you get into the more explicit free reserve targets later on, the instructions are very vague. They really in this period we're talking about now, they're phrased in terms of tone and feel. Often.
But that's probably why he eventually moved to a preoccupation with the free reserve targets and the setting of specific targets. I suppose represented in part of dissatisfaction with interpretation of the looser, feely, touchy words.
Mm-hmm. So when you had your conversations with people on the New York desk in terms of their desire to intervene and buy securities, what do you remember about FOMC instructions? Was it primarily in terms of an understanding of what the, say, the three-month Treasury bill rate was going to be, or was it more general in terms of kind of just how the market was feeling, tight or loose?
Well, I think even back then, even though it was much more specific maybe than now, that there was an eclectic approach of rates, free reserves, tightness of the system, tightness of the commercial banking system. Mm-hmm. And I suppose at times there was some disagreement over how to interpret all the different data.
Mm-hmm. How much was Chairman Martin involved in discussions with the desk? If the Treasury bill rate began to rise or fall sharply, would he be brought into the discussions as far as you know?
Not to the best of my remembrance with the desk.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, every morning we had what was known as an 11 o'clock call.
Mm-hmm.
Where we talked to the desk every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, he was not involved in that. That was all at the staff.
Mm-hmm.
At the staff level. Mm-hmm. But if there's if difficulties arose or disagreements arose on that, well, he would be apprised of that, and then it would move to a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
Of discussion. But in the day-to-day operational discussions with the 11 o'clock call, he was not involved, because many, many times that would be just a routine call, which would be a reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be no, you didn't get a big policy crisis every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that he wouldn't be directly involved in that.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything?
Neither would. Riefler was occasionally would listen in, but he would not be closely involved either. Woody Thomas, on the other hand, quite often played a role in that.
Mm-hmm. What about, were any of the other governors generally involved in the
no.
morning call? So it would have been just Thomas on the part of the board, and then yourself and, you know, other
right.
staff members. Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the particular reasons for strong disagreement between the New York desk and the board? You know, bills only is the famous one. Do you remember
yeah.
any of the other arguments that you could?
Not, you know, no, you're stretching me. Not specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of this comes, this kind of comes drifting back now of that there were some disagreements, but I couldn't cite you chapter and verse or specifics.
Mm-hmm. You said you were at the board through 58.
Right, I left in summer of 58.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the period from summer 57 to summer 58 was especially interesting. The FOMC was concerned about inflation that summer, and when the economy began to weaken, kept interest rates up despite the feelings of the Council of Economic Advisors. And then there was a debate in the spring of 1958 over whether the Fed should continue to be concerned about inflation, how low it should push interest rates. Do you remember any of those debates within the FOMC meetings and kind of differences of opinion and kind of how Martin handled those? And
no, I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have to generalize that,
mm-hmm.
That I think we had probably at the board more of an anti-inflation bias
mm-hmm.
than I know we did, than the administration. I can't remember where the New York Fed fit into that at that time.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember, were there ever disagreements within the FOMC that were strong, or was Martin the views within the FOMC generally, you know, Martin could fairly easily kind of summarize them and, you know, make things go the way he was interested in having them go?
He was pretty good
mm-hmm.
at coming up with a consensus or a position so that I don't recall many pitched battles. You know, at
mm-hmm.
that time he was riding pretty high on a reputation and was pretty highly regarded, so that I think he often carried the day
mm-hmm.
on his own strength. So that he generally prevailed.
Do you remember anything else in general about how the FOMC meetings were organized, and you know, how the discussions were carried on?
Well, I think they were, you know, they were carried on in effect. Martin, I don't want to give the impression that he was dictatorial, but he certainly gave a leeway to the venting of any other points of view or opinions on the part of the presidents.
Mm-hmm.
His own board, he usually had, you know, had a pretty solid majority. And most of the time when I were there, there weren't any real mavericks in terms of policy. So, you know, somebody being able to develop a strong
mm-hmm.
anti-Martin or a strong point of view that did not sort of jibe with the other governors.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, you know, I remember mostly back to the earlier days when Alan Sproul, who was a much different personality and a much stronger person, could take positions, present points of view that were the other way. So that that was different. And
you were never there.
Al Hayes was off. Was too much of a gentleman, I think, really to really take on Martin in a
Hayes would have been the dominant individual other than Martin,
Bucked into
representing the New York Fed, but as you said, he didn't have the kind of personality, and he wasn't an economist, so he didn't have the inclination or ability to ever challenge Martin.
Not in the way that that Sproul did in a much earlier.
Did you ever attend the meeting with Sproul and Martin?
I think so. I'm trying to think how in the world I got in there. When did Sproul?
55.
Sometimes there would be specific reports to be given for a specific, say, a question on a tax policy or something. Yeah. So they would ask the staff person to come in and to sit in the, with your back against the wall and to be quiet.
Yeah.
And I think that I did luck in. In some of those earlier years, just as an observer, but remember well that he was a force to be reckoned with.
Do you have any recollection of FOMC debates toward the end with the recession and kind of feelings that Martin expressed about what the Fed should be doing? Do you have any remembrances of those meetings?
No, not specifically. It's interesting. Both Martin and Riefler had a certain area of mysticism about them, and they were able to convey that or handle it in such a way that I think, looking back, that they accomplished some things in those days that now would have met with much more serious questioning and demand for a more solid explanation in terms of theory and fact as to why this was the best approach or why this would work. But they, and I don't know whether the Martin's position is a reflection of Riefler's training, so to speak, or Riefler's influence for many years, or just what. But it's kind of interesting that he, Martin was not an economist, thinker, policy-oriented person in the same sense that Riefler was, yet he was able to kind of present an aura or a position that would often carry the day.
Well, he must have known, where he wanted to come out, and he must have then gotten that from talking with Riefler and Woody Thomas, and then just an ability to...
I think the three of them did, they did do a lot of talking, a lot of discussion.
And then Martin had the ability to deal with people, and the word people keep using is charm. He had an ability to charm people and bring them around, so kind of knowing where he wanted to go, he was effective in a committee meeting.
He was very adept at running those board meetings. One of his adeptness is that affected me is that I happened to be a tennis player, as was Martin, and we used to play.
Oh, you must have been very good.
At noon, we used to play at, every noon, and I've never seen a man that could end a board meeting or a meeting at 11:44 so we could be out on the courts at 11:55.
You must have been very good.
Yeah, he was great.
Youngdahl played too. Who else
Leach.
Played? Leach played too.
Leach was a tennis player too. So that's how I kind of snuck into that. I kind of entered into a lot of things via Dick Youngdahl and Ralph Leach, really.
Did you ever have any conversations with Martin through the tennis, or did you simply play and then walk?
Oh, no. When we played tennis, we played tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah.
And Louis Robertson used to play with us, and we had some horrible pitch battles. That is, out on the court, there was no love lost.
Yes, Martin must have been a very competitive person underneath his.
In a quiet, basic sort of way, whereas Louis Robertson was a bulldog, all on the surface type competitor.
Well, that's
in fact, I can remember once we had in your bailiwick, we, for planning and training purposes, we moved. This was when we were, you know, scared that Washington was going to be bombed or something in the Cold War period. We moved the an FOMC meeting to Richmond, and we went down to the Richmond Fed and had an FOMC meeting.
Just,
and there was a
just for practice?
Had quite a problem finding a court at the right particular time so that we could do that, plus have the FOMC meeting.
So that was just, that was kind of a drill in case there was an emergency?
Yeah, we met in Richmond instead of Washington.
Hmm.
Got out of town and went through a drill at an alternate facility.
Hmm.
I can't remember when that was, but it was an interesting exercise.
Hmm. I'd like to ask you a few questions about your later association with Secretary Kennedy, but do you have any other kind of recollections about the individuals you worked with, or the kinds of things we've touched on in terms of relationships between the New York Fed and the board? And
well, I guess I'd have to say, you know, and how much, as I look back on it later years, how much really now I'm impressed on the caliber of the people, both at the New York Fed and who I knew quite a few, and even though I may have disagreed with them, I certainly, they were no dummies. And the board staff, at least for the years I was there, was certainly top notch. And it's interesting how many of them, you know, went on to become well-known professors at the University of Chicago or begin or other places. There were really some excellent people.
What, do you remember the names of any other individuals I should try to contact from that period you were there?
Well, one of them was Irving Schweiger, who was at the University of Chicago. He's dead.
Yeah.
Has gone on now. I'm trying to think who else. Well, I hired Nancy Teeters, for example.
Hmm.
And she worked in my section for a number of years before she left and came back later as a governor.
So what year did you hire her? Do you remember about when that would have been? Well, it would have been,
I would guess, 58? The middle 50s.
Hmm.
She was a student someplace. And again, I hired her to work on treasury and budgetary.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of the same thing that I, when I went there in the government finance section.
Yeah, I've met her. She's very capable, and I'll hope to interview her sometime, too.
Yeah, she, I can't remember when she left. I think I left before she did, as I recall.
Yeah, she left later in the 1960s, late 60s.
Is Jack Noyes still alive?
I don't think so, but I don't actually know.
Yeah, I'm afraid not either. He succeeded Ralph Young.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, was excellent.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Nobody's mentioned his name, but
I'm afraid that he would, if he is, he would be a very good source in terms of a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was a good observer of human nature.
Hmm. Okay. Well, so then when you left the Fed, you went to work for Continental. And what association did you have with Kennedy when you were there?
Well, he hired me.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd gone to Continental a few years before, and I guess I don't know how. I don't know what, by what route he got a hold of me or whatever it was, but it kind of came out of the blue, and he made me an offer, and I went out there, and he was president at that time, and then a few years later he became chairman and CEO,
mm-hmm.
so that I was with him during the years when he really expanded the international reach of the bank, of which he was, instrumental, and was, I think, quite a bit ahead of the times in terms of his appreciation with the foreign associations meant to U.S. banking.
So he would have been conservative on issues having to do with the gold standard and Bretton Woods, and he would have been a very different secretary than John Connolly was.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of how he felt?
Well, Connolly was a politician first,
uh-huh.
I think, and then...
the governor of Texas.
Yeah. I don't know if you've probably run into this, you know, that this is more of John Connolly than
sure,
Kennedy, but
fine.
When Connolly was chosen Secretary of Treasury, there was a kind of a hue and cry from the banking community and investment community, you know, that this was pure and simple a political appointment and so on. And there were a lot of statements that went out. One of them was, with reference to him, was can he add? And he sat in this committee that I was on, the American Bankers Association Government Borrowing Committee, who would meet with each financing and make recommendations as to how the debt should be handled,
mm-hmm.
and what it should be. That's where we spent a lot of time with John Larkin. And at the first meeting after Connolly was appointed, he came into the meeting. And, you know, we were all prepared to sort of look down our nose at him and all of this. And he put on the darndest performance. And nobody asked after that, was, can he add?
Hmm.
He may not have been an economist, but...
yeah, he's very capable.
He sure was. And he sure had a grasp of... he had a little better grasp of what the questions were concerning the financing than a lot of the presidents of... commercial bank sitting around the table had somebody did a good briefing job too, of course, but
yeah, I think Paul Volcker was working with him,
yeah.
So I think Connolly was,
yeah, well,
was
that,
an apt pupil.
He sure taught him.
So Nixon asked Kennedy to leave because he wanted someone who was who would offer him kind of political advice. Do you have any feeling about that?
Well,
why Kennedy left?
Kennedy was, I think very capable in terms of a lot of the things required of a Secretary of the Treasury, but I don't think he was a great infighter or a great politician. Like apparently is one of the requirements.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew the business and he knew the fundamentals. But I guess maybe that wasn't enough for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But, those of us who knew him fairly well, you know, certainly had no doubt as to his abilities or capabilities of handling... at least the non-political parts of the job.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me anything about him, your impressions of him as an individual, or what he was like to work with? Or, yeah.
Oh, he was just great. He was a very straightforward, as far as I'm concerned, never played games about anything. A very religious man.